I'm Andrew Gordon, founder of Yoga Moves You, the journey into yoga. Yoga found me in 2002, helped me drop 60 pounds, and also helped my battle with depression and anxiety. After my father passed unexpectedly of a heart attack on 9/6 of 2001, the tragic events happened just 5 days later of 9/11. I was confused and suffered from PTSD. My friend suggested a yoga studio close to where I was living on Long Island. It was owned by a fireman who answered the call on 9/11. He told me that he used his yoga to get him through what he saw. I heard his story and believed that there was something in this to help me. There was. Always will be. It's which is why I've chosen this path to share.
Hello, Miss Terry Reeves. Welcome. Welcome to the first Yoga Moves You podcast. So excited to have one of my favorite teachers, near and dear to my heart, on our inaugural podcast.
Very excited to be here, Andrew. I am tickled. I had no idea I was the first, so thank you very much.
Well, somebody's got to be the first, and it might as well be you.
Early adopters, that's right. I want to be on the cutting edge, so this is good.
All right, so Terry, tell me a little bit about your history, how you ended up as a yoga student, and then eventually into a teacher.
So, you know, I think, and I'll make this as brief as possible, but, you know, you kind of go back to the genesis, and I believe at a young age, I really found a real affinity with movement, and movement made me feel connected to my body. It made me feel empowered, and as I was moving at a young age, I probably did not realize any of that, except for it made me feel good. And so I got bitten by the movement bug early on, danced and did gymnastics and did cheerleading and started teaching aerobics way back in the day when it was carpet over concrete, high impact aerobics and Jane Fonda way back, right? Needless to say, have through a lot of decades of movement and have kind of evolved with my own opinion of what keeps my body physically healthy. And I believe yoga as a result of going through a divorce.
Wow.
And I was looking for something a bit more soulful, not to just physically beat my body up. And not that we do that when we're being physically active, but yoga invites us to do also self-care.
Yes.
The yin and yang, the yin and yang. And it really was a very wonderful experience. It has mirrored kind of my life's journey with well-being, because I think that exercise, the asana, the physical part of yoga is powerful, but I think it's the work in that creates this greater depth of discovery, because, you know, yoga is self-discovery and it's going inward, getting connected to sensation, to the moment, to breath, to intention, being very connected to how you're feeling. So it invites such a deeper exploration than just the asana. And I believe that's where my life is headed. So I am bitten. I will probably do yoga until I cannot move anymore. Feel really, really blessed because I have met so many amazing people along the yoga journey. I mean, people that have become very good friends. I mean, we've known each other for a long time. Suzanne, Grace, I mean, Tanner. When you think about Jonna, I kind of look around and it's amazing how part of the yoga community has become not just my experience when I'm in this studio on my mat, but a part of people that I really care about. And so the community really does go outside the studio. So long-winded, but I've had a long journey.
You actually answered two of my questions within that one questions answer, but that's great. If you ever leave yoga, you do have a career as a minister. I do feel inspired and uplifted when I listen to you speak, and that's something that you bring to your classes that I know personally. On that note, in three words, it's a little bit of a challenge, but in three words, how would you describe one of your classes?
Ooh, okay, wow, three words. Empowering.
Terry, I'm just kidding. It was actually 1,000 words. I wanted to trim down your answer.
Still, I would still use the word empowering.
Okay.
Physically soulful.
Ooh.
I think there's a balance, right?
Yeah.
Empower, inspire. You want the asana to take people to a place where they feel challenged but not struggling. And I want to create a safe and nurturing environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to connect and to go in and begin to kind of ask internal questions that are both about the asana, but also about emotion, about energy, journey of self-discovery. Love, love music, love teaching to all levels, love beginners, love to see the light bulb go off. So I would say people would probably describe me as high energy, although I want to make sure there's the balance because you want to create equanimity in a flow. So you want people to have ease of mind and ease of body. And I think as a teacher, that is always, you know, my challenge is how can you create that sweet spot for your students?
Yes.
And just trying to, with the messaging, because I think we have such an opportunity to help people see life in a broader perspective. So I hope that I'm intellectually challenging people by getting them to think beyond just the physical. Why am I here physically? To really ask some deeper questions. You know, the neuroscience and the research behind yoga is so powerful now that to begin to bring that into the studio so people become awake to the research, to all the things that we've intuitively known in our bodies, but now are being able to recognize through research and measurement, both through neuroscience, MRIs, I mean, all the things that we can see energetically that are literally measurable in the body through technology now. So it's just very exciting. And so I hope to keep pushing the envelope myself so that I can bring back what I'm learning so no one's sitting still. We're continuing to take this journey together.
Well, okay. So you talked about that music is a big thing for you during your classes, as it is for me and many other teachers who might be listening to this. How do you decipher when the music is a tool and when it possibly becomes a hindrance?
Ooh, I've had that conversation with a lot of teachers lately. And I think the world around us is so busy and there's so much distraction and often in the form of noise. And I think that what's important that we don't lose sight of is that when we're teaching, how can we create an environment that evokes peace? Music begins to upstage the breath and the connection to the body, and it becomes the centerpiece of a practice. We've distorted where yoga needs to be, and we've let music overtake tension behind yoga. I do think music can be beautiful, and I've been playing around, Andrew, lately with more tribal music that has got more drum, less lyric.
Yep.
And I have been moving almost as if I'm taking somebody on a beautiful roller coaster ride where they don't feel these like really super highs and really super lows. But if you can imagine like kind of almost the rolling of the tide where you can create some peaks and valleys with the music, creating different connections in terms of vibration in the body.
Yes.
So, I believe that practice without music is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
I think practice complemented by music can be wonderful. I think practice upstaged by music is taking us away from the essence of yoga. So that's where I live now. I might change my mind in another month, but I've really been giving that a lot of thought lately. I think a lot of teachers are.
Yeah, I actually have been tackling that myself, and I've gone more of the route that you're going where I'm not really having many lyrics, if any at all, in the classes. And the tones or the beats that we're using are primordial, right? Like they're more attached to our primitive essence.
Absolutely. One disclaimer, you know, there are great classes that have really funky, high energy movement. And at the end of the day, our opportunity is to expose them to yoga in whatever way we can and to meet them where they are. So if music empowers them and that gets them excited and keeps them coming back to the mat, then, you know, more power to them. So I think, you know, we have to be careful in living in absolutes. And so practicing yoga, trying to say, okay, what is the right situation for the right client? And how can music be used to invite people in? And where can it be properly integrated to power the yoga to another level? Where is it disruptive? And then where is it okay to play it crazy and loud? I mean, sometimes that may speak to somebody as much as silence speaks to me. And at the end of the day, we want people moving on their mat, connecting to their breath. In whatever way we can get them there, that's a victory, right?
Terry, you could come in with a kazoo in your class. It would be awesome.
Sing, though, I will frighten you. The good news.
Doubt that.
Singing, not singing.
well, Terry, it's beautiful because every time you answer a question, it leads. You're leading to where I want to go, which is pretty freaking awesome. So if there's a brand new student to your class, what's the one piece of advice that you can give to someone to keep a brand new student to your class coming back to your class or coming back to the studio?
You know, we think about compassion and self-care. Mm-hmm. So it's encouraging people to be patient, to modify, to just breathe, and to enjoy the journey and to detach from personal judgment of their capability and to be grateful for where they are. And that is on their mat, even if it's a forward fold or in child's posture for an hour. They're in the room breathing, and that is yoga. We are judgmental as a society, and particularly of ourselves, very hard on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the one place where we want to soften as a society, as individuals, for ourselves and one another. And I think if we can just help people find that peace and help them not judge and to encourage and inspire by practicing what we preach as teachers. And so it's forgiveness, it's compassion, it's self-care, it's being patient. It's enjoying the process, the journey, because yoga is not about a destination. Mm-hmm. So I think that can come in the form of one-on-one conversations. It can come in the form of a gentle touch or through helping somebody with a posture, through assisting, offering modifications, you know, talking to students as they're leaving, in your messaging, reminding everybody that we're not coming to our mat to achieve anything. We're coming to our mat just to be. So I think, it doesn't really, it's no one thing. It's probably an aggregation of a lot of things, but I think self-care, compassion, patience, and reminding people it's a process.
Y'all, she just dropped like gems, like bags of gems. You should be sending her checks in the mail. What are your thoughts, if any, about the pros and cons of the Insta yogis? Because you mentioned about creating self-acceptance and we have such a judgmental society. The whole yogis and yoginis on Instagram and what's pushed out there. Do you think it has any effect on that? And if so, what?
Wow, you're hitting on lots of conversations I've been having with people. So I love branding. I love letting people know about whatever it is you're trying to encourage them to do. And so Instagram, social media, I mean, all the ways in which we can communicate are wonderful. I think we need to be very responsible with how we use those lanes of communication, whether it's Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we can push out imaging and messaging, social media. You know, oh, God, I think about when I was 20. I mean, I'd probably be doing Peach and My Rasin on the beach in my bikini. I mean, I guess I could. But that's not where I'm living these days. And so my thought is I'm not judging anybody. And if they're out there trying to communicate and empower people through imaging, I think that's great. What I would caution and maybe encourage, and I've been thinking about this a lot with my own posts, is yoga about us? Is it about the posture? You know, or is it about what it evokes? Is it about the intention? Is it about empowering people to self-care, to do, you know, self-study, to explore? And so it would be cool to see an equal amount of posts out there that really encourage people to just kind of take a pause and go, wouldn't this posting be powerful if I did a positive affirmation? Or maybe I could share an experience that I had as a teacher. Maybe I could get a testimonial from a new student talking about how powerful the yoga experience was for them.
Yeah.
Maybe I could show a group of smiling, sweaty faces of all shapes and sizes sitting on the floor after a class together, so that we're really showing what yoga really is about. Because you think about India, you think about yoga, you think about the roots of it. It goes, I mean, it's so deep.
Yeah.
But, you know, we westernize stuff, and that's not a bad thing. That's culturally who we are. And, you know, again, I don't want to live in absolutes. I mean, I've definitely posted some postures on Facebook and LinkedIn. But I think it's the balance, Andrew. I think it's reminding people, while we do yoga,
You talked very, very well about both sides, about the balance and not absolutes. And that's a big, big takeaway.
And we're all wired differently. We're all motivated differently. We all have different perspectives. So I think we kind of communicate and we post where we are. And I think that the broader we can think about how we can message people about what yoga really is about, the better chance we have of giving a true perspective, especially for that person that might be struggling, that's not in, that may be intimidated. And maybe the message is some soulful quote from Gandhi, right? Or Maya Angelou. Brene Brown. I mean, you could keep going on and on. And maybe sprinkle that in. Maybe some testimonials, some real powerful, just soulful posts that really give somebody a deeper understanding that yoga is just not about a pose. Now, it's definitely about the pose.
I mean, yeah. It goes
on. Asana is the fundamental thing that we do in westernized asana. But I do think it's a balance and zero judgment. I think it takes, you know, a kaleidoscope of colors to make a rainbow. Mm. Same thing with yoga teachers. So, you know, bring it, promote it, you know, be intentional, be authentic. And if anything, I think that's what is going to be most powerful, is for people to find their voice and for it true and authentic and that to be represented in their posting.
Oh, love it. And you set me up for the next two questions. You teach a lot. I want to know how you manage to bring it every class and how you keep yourself charged without burning out. Cause you're very high energy, like myself. But on the flip side of that, I might just go home and just stare at a wall for like an hour and tell my wife that I just need an hour to stare at the wall. So.
Yes. So I love what I do. And you're doing your dharma and you're working your life's passions and you're doing what you believe you were brought to this earth to do, that every time you do it, you get fueled. And I think a perfect way to determine whether you're doing something that's not aligning with your core values and your life's purpose is when you do it, you get exhausted. So I actually get energized teaching. I think when I'm in a class with students, I'm breathing with them.
Yes.
There is an ease to my teaching. And I think that it's because I've learned to sort of surrender and to be authentic and to just flow with the movement and the energy in the room. I'm not working so hard. I'm working with rather than working, you know, to do or achieve something. I'm kind of working in the rhythm that's already being created by the students. And I think that helps me preserve energy in an interesting kind of way. I do try to practice self-care outside the studio. So I'm mindful to get good rest. I get really grounded and centered before I teach. You know, I surround myself with other teachers that I can talk to, that can kind of, you know, that I can share ideas with, going to workshops, continuing to learn and grow. Also keep me inspired and fueled. I think my students empower me because I see their success and that's a fuel for me. Not that I help them get there, because ultimately people have to get there on their own.
But don't shortchange yourself.
I mean, well, but to in some way be part of the genesis that may have influenced somebody.
Sure. Yes.
I mean, it is great. But, you know, you also know that people are not going to do anything that they're not ready to do. So you're just there to ease them along when they're ready. And that's powerful because you don't feel responsible and you let go of the fixing and the controlling because that's not my job. And I think I look at teaching as empowering and then you just let these amazing people that are incredibly powerful on their own just fly. And so I don't take on a lot of extra responsibility, which I think also helps. Really being intentional in the way in which you spend your time and energy, because neither one of those things can you buy more or less of. They are constant, but you can choose how you spend both of them, time, energy, and just being aware, I mean, of how your energy is being expended in a particular day. And, you know, some people just jump into the day and they just jump in. And I think for me, I'm trying to pause and kind of look at the day, look at the week and go, okay, how am I going to gracefully move through this week energetically? Where do I want to spend my time and energy and who do I want to spend it with? doing what? So those are very intentional questions that I ask. And you know, that probably got bigger than your question, but I do think energy and time are valuable. And we all need to really take heart, intentional in the way we use it.
How do you keep your actual classes fresh when it might be a lot of the same people coming to Terry's different classes every week?
So I think choreography, the actual sequencing, I love doing that. It's one of my favorite things on the planet to do. So that's easy for me. I can change my sequencing every class. I mean, sometimes I don't, because I think sometimes it's nice to have, you know, your students be able to anchor and to feel the movement a couple of classes. And then if you're working some stronger postures, to give it, them a chance to actually work those into their bodies.
Yes.
But I think changing the sequencing, you know, using your music appropriately, changing that up. I mean, I love getting on Spotify and playing with music, because music creates an energy. We talked about that earlier.
Yes.
So I think that can create a newness. So I believe that it's just not necessarily having to recreate the wheel every time, but it's thinking about the elements of the class and being creative, but also being solid in your delivery, consistent in your delivery. Because, I mean, honestly, I don't know that students really know that you're changing the sequencing. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as teachers, when sometimes it's okay to say the same thing, to do the same sequence. I think there's a delicate balance. I mean, I think we want to create newness and we want to create variety, but there's some beauty in continuity. I mean, Ashtanga. I mean,
right.
The first series. I mean, you're doing the same thing over and over and over again. So you know that sweet spot in the middle. But I know for me, learning, seeking, growing, doing workshops, talking to like-minded people. I mean, keeping myself aware and awake to what's out there helps to energize me so that I can come back and pour that into my classes.
That is very, very cool. I'm right on board with what you're saying. Dropping bombs, dropping truth bombs. There she goes. But it's really great. It's really great stuff to offer people that are listening, especially teachers that are new or teachers that are still in training. On that topic about being you and, you know, finding your voice, how long and in general would you describe the process of finding your own teaching voice? Like, how did you become the you-iest you?
Oh, gosh. I think it's constant evolution. And I think that authenticity is being at ease with yourself. Because I think when you're at ease with yourself, that gives almost this energy to class that they feel it. Whether they recognize it or not, I think they feel it. And I mean, Andrew, I've seen teachers come out of teacher training that all of a sudden can just teach. There is this innate gift that they just have. And then there are certain teachers that work harder at it and they finally get there. And it just is more training. But they say you master something after what, 10,000 hours?
10,000 hours.
Something like that. I've read that stat over again.
Malcolm Gladwell.
Yes, that's exactly. And I don't know that it takes 10,000 hours to become authentically you. I think the moment we start breathing, we just let the guard down and stop wearing the mask. We are authentically ourselves. And I think that you can show up as a new teacher and be authentic and empower people, because we all start somewhere. And a new teacher, a new person taking yoga may identify with. So I think it's just being there in the room present. It is being mindful of your energy. It's being as authentic as you possibly can be. It's letting go of fear and embracing love. It is sequencing intelligently. And I do think there's a responsibility of teachers to understand anatomy, range of motion, how to go in and align and assist people. I'm a big believer that those fundamental things need to be rock solid. But I think a lot of the other stuff is, you know, just be you and listen to music that moves you and play with that and see what resonates with the class. Be awake to see how you show up. Be awake as a teacher to see how you're influencing other people. How are people receiving you energetically? How is the class responding?
Now, I do want to ask about this, because I do think it's relevant for teachers that are coming up and teachers that are currently teaching as well. But you also give amazing assist. When you come into a class, how do you decide who to assist, what type of assists, and how much during a class. So there's like a group of people and you're kind of like, that person's somewhat new. I know that person. That person I've seen a couple of times based on their level. What's your mindset? What's your game plan and how and what assists you're giving to whom in your classes?
These are great questions, Andrew.
Thank you.
And I think that the assisting when done properly is a powerful piece to integrate in. And so you kind of baseline your class. I also think new people that come in, you greet them, you ask them if there's been any injuries. I think those are things important to talk about. This one is a very quiet one, but there are a lot of people that come to yoga to heal from addiction, from abuse. And some people don't want to be touched because they're working through body issues. Mm-hmm. They're working through emotional issues. To be sensitive to who takes your class, understand their story, introduce yourself to new students, kind of get a feel. You can almost tell energetically who wants to be touched or not. If you're really in tune, you can get a sense as a teacher. And I know you probably can relate to this. And I can also, when I go in, I can see somebody's body and see where they're out of alignment. And so I will go in and get a baseline where I'm push-pull. So you're kind of going in and you're not pulling one in without giving the other support. You kind of go in and you see how their body gives.
Yeah.
I can feel rigid, tight bodies, and I can feel soft and open bodies. So I think I read that energy. I kind of go in and I will sometimes talk to people. I'll say, how does that feel?
Yeah.
And you know who you can talk to and who you shouldn't make eye contact with. But when I'm going in that close, kind of checking in usually. And there are people that are more advanced. You get to know those folks where you can assist in the Bird of Paradise. I mean, some of the deeper postures. But I think that that is a level of awareness that requires some independent kind of studying of the energy around a person, how they feel when you go in, when you touch them, how their body responds. And, you know, it adds a great dynamic to a class. People love it. But if you don't assist well, you knock people over, you pull them.
Now, you mentioned about knocking people over. What is, if you can recall, the most embarrassing moment during your teaching that ever happened in a class?
Well, messaging about being in the moment, aware of details, and just, you know, settling in. And I was in horse posture, turned to the side, and I looked to the right in the mirror because I was talking about, you know, slightly tucking your tailbone under, creating strength in the legs, and, you know, all the stuff you're supposed to talk about. I have my clothes on inside out. My clothes on side out. My tags inside out.
Wait, shirt and pants or shorts?
Oh, yeah. I fell on the floor laughing. And I'm like, oh, my God. I am sitting here talking to y'all about being in the moment and paying attention to the details. And I freaking run in here like a bat out of hell, threw my clothes on inside out, came in here and just realized clothes on inside.
And you spoke that to the class? You announced that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you got to be poke fun at yourself.
I kind of suspected your answer was yes, but I was, and I'm glad that you said it was. I knew that you would say that, and that's what makes you.
Well, I've knocked some people over before. Now, I've definitely, you know, it's not like I've been a perfect assister from the beginning, you know, and people are forgiving. I mean, you just laugh about it and, you know, you go in next time and you just learn from it. And, you know, we're all going to fall down. We're all going to miss a beat.
Yep.
But we got to practice our yoga. That's where you learn. And, you know, you just don't get caught up in it. You know, chitta-vrittis in the brain. Just ruminate things that are not serving your higher good. And I think some people just foster that mistake. And that's what they live with rather than the opportunity to learn from it, grow from it, and move through it. And, you know, yoga teaches us to do that. I mean, so as teachers, we've got to emulate in our actions, you know, what we're messaging about or guess what? There's a real disconnect and no authenticity.
Do you feel that, you know, once you crossed over, going back to the beginning of our conversation, from a student into a teacher, that some of the magic is gone?
Oh, no, not at all. No. I love both sides of it. I love teaching. I love taking. I love the combination. So more magic because positions as a teacher and then certainly as being, I'm always going to be a student. There's such beauty on both sides of that. So no loss of fire at all.
I love it. That was a shocking answer because many people say, oh, the magic's gone once you become a teacher. But
no way, Jose. You got to stay on the mat. Now, a lot of teachers teach and don't get their practice in. And I think that's what dims the light. That's when the fire goes out. So it's just being, you know, consistent with your practice and not letting your teaching upstage your own ability to do self-care.
You've always got like 90,000 things going on. What do you want to speak about that you're up to now besides teaching yoga? And where can people find you?
Okay, wow. And maybe for me, I'm suing my master's in a program called MSOD. So it's Masters of Science in Organization Development. And what that means is helping companies, helping communities, helping individuals institutionalize change on the individual level, in the group setting, with teams within organizations, and at the enterprise level. So it's almost like taking yoga into an executive environment and helping people become self-aware. Improve communication, helping people understand different communication styles, giving forgiveness, building resiliency, helping with stress management. So that is definitely something that I'm very excited. I am in the middle of my master's program. I'm loving it. I'm learning. It's been amazing.
Ah, that's so cool, Terry.
I know, right? You know, I've been in wellness of some sort for the last like 30 years.
Yes.
Have been in corporate wellness with several companies, HealthGram, and now a company called Target Care. And I do consulting for Target Care. We do on-site clinics, behavioral health coaching, love it, but I feel like it's very westernized.
And okay.
So I created a company 3 years ago called Empower Health America, and I was on a quest to figure out how I could integrate Eastern and Western modalities and to take that philosophy and in some way package it in programming that I could take to individuals, groups, and corporations. And the intention is to help people become more aware, awake, empowered, and transformed. So what that means is for the last 2 years, I've done research, like looking at what impacts people's happiness. And so I have developed a model which basically has picked 15 dimensions of someone's life, which often influences their level of happiness. And so this is all research and science-based.
Yes.
And I've created an online assessment tool, which is out in the market for 6 months. It's called Train for Life Assessment. And it allows people to go in and take inventory of their lives, self-study, in 15 different dimensions. And what happens out of that is the ability to see where you're thriving, what's impacting your happiness, where you might be stressed, what's affecting productivity. And so it's a self-assessment tool which allows you to become more aware and awake, importantly, to where you are in your life based on the dimensions. And then what, importantly, you want to take action, your readiness to take action. So it's got gaming embedded in it. It's got 15 action plans for each dimension. So you're able to go through and really get a sense of where you are. And if there's areas that you want to work on, there are built-in action plans so that you can actually work on the dimensions. And then I've created a program which flows out of the assessment. Basically, it's called Train for Life Empowerment Program, and it's four major components. And basically, the way the program unfolds for people is there is a section that's dedicated to self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And then there is a component that is really about neuroscience and mindfulness. The third area dives into stress management and resiliency. And then the fourth component, and they're all interrelated. You cannot teach one without talking about the other. But the last piece is what I'm calling intrinsic motivation. So your goal setting, because things are intrinsically motivating to you. Mm. And then the last piece is intentional living. That's what I've been doing for the last probably 20 years. Didn't know it, but in a very formalized way, it's what I've created over the last 2 years. And it is live. That's kind of a high level peek behind the scenes. And, you know, definitely would welcome people to come to my website and call me, you know, certainly 704-200-4459, my cell phone, and text me.
What's the website, just in case someone's listening overseas?
Yeah, so it's www.trainforlife.com. yogamusu.com. And if somebody wanted to jump in and take the assessment, you could, and you just type in the word empowerment, and that's the code. And certainly people can go in and beta test it. I haven't locked it down yet.
Probably it's okay.
Keep it open for about another month. And then after the fact, what I would encourage people to do is I have a corporate website, which people certainly could go to, and that's empowerhealthamerica.com. And then the Train for Life is F-O-R, not the number
four. I was going to say gangsta four or
gangsta four.
Dictionary four.
Email, and that's a great way to reach me, is Terry, T-E-R-R-I-E dot train, T-R-A-I-N, trip, and then four again, F-O-R, Train for Life at gmail.com. And yeah, I love this. I think what you're doing to get the word out.
Thank you.
Through a podcast is wonderful. Andrew, I've loved working with you over the years and love what you're doing. And that, you know, like-minded people working together, that's what it's about. And, you know, if I can do anything to help you, and certainly I'm so honored that you had me be your inaugural podcast girl. So
I love it. I think that it's just going to kick things off on the right foot because you are so uplifting and inspiring and a light. You're just a light. Well,
thank you. I love what I do. And I think that's how you know you're doing your dharma. And I hope I am doing this for the rest of my life. I am writing a book and I hope to get that published in a year. And I'm doing lots of research because I feel like I want to make sure what I'm talking about is grounded in research and based in education, because I think that gives it more credibility and it gives it more texture.
It does.
You know, I mean, it puts it in context, brings in research that validates some of the theory. Yeah. Just anybody and everybody that's interested in empowerment, I would be glad to at least help where I can or get people connected to a great resource.
Amen. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. And I'm so grateful for you to share your time and information and valuable insights that you've offered.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And that, you know, I appreciate your friendship and thank you for spreading the word through the podcast. And definitely let's circle up. And if I can help you in any way or give you more insight on what I'm up to, we can talk offline. But it's been a delight.
Thank you.
Chatting.
Hey, likewise, Terry. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you to our very special guest, Terry Reeves. And you can check us out on various platforms, such as the iTunes podcast. Look up Yoga Moves You podcast. And also on Stitcher and on our website, yogamovesyou.org/podcast. If you have show ideas or would like to be featured on the podcast, send a message to info@yogamovesyou.org. Thanks again. And we'll talk to you next time.